An ideal mind. An ideal mind. This is the thought for today, Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing in Campo, California. An ideal mind. What is an ideal mind? Well, we think that we have an ideal mind. We think that our mind is rather spectacular. We think that we are tuned into our indwelling spirit in a beautiful way, and that all our words and all of our attitudes and all of our thoughts are worth hearing, are worth sharing, are worth living, are worth loving, are worth being. And we're right. We're right. Everything we are is worth being. An ideal mind is a mind that is harmonious with itself. Now we think that, well, an ideal mind would be wonderful. That would be with an intelligent mind, a mind that has the intelligence of an Einstein, perhaps, or some great being, maybe a Shakespeare, some great intelligence that flows and flows and flows, maybe the music of Mozart, you know, maybe the ability to talk endlessly like Herb talks, you know, maybe that'd be a great mind, the ideal mind. Well, the ideal mind is the mind that has the ability to be at home with itself. The mind that has the ability to be at one with itself. The mind that finds in itself all that it ever wishes, wants, desires, seeks out to express in any way. We say we have the ideal mind when we are tuned in to whatever it is that interests us. Say, for instance, we're interested in running track. Now, that's a very mundane, ordinary thing. But to run track, what do you do? Well, every morning I used to get up as a youngster and go out and run along the parkway, which was in through the winter and the summer. And it was very cold in the wintertime. And I'd take my dog, Butch, along with me, and we'd run along the parkway. And I would run a jog, more of a jog, a fast jog. And I would run beautifully and strongly. And I'd have my sweatpants on, sweatshirt, and my tennis shoes, and some sort of hat. And I'd just be running along, having a great old time. Now, I never thought that I'd be running in a race. I never thought that I'd be running in competition to anyone. I always just thought I am running track. I'm preparing myself to be a track person, a person who can run track. I didn't say track star, just a person who loves to run track. Well, I did that. I did that for years. And I was out for track and I was okay. But I enjoyed what I did. I lived in my ideal mind in my running of the track. In my running of the track, I had all sorts of imaginative ideas that were flooding through my thoughts. I was 15, 16, 17 years old, thoroughly enjoying myself, thoroughly enjoying the world about me, thoroughly enjoying Butch, thoroughly enjoying the weather, the snow, the ice, the cold, the rain, the heat, not so much heat, because I always went early in the morning. But it was always a lovely time. And there was virtually no one out. Maybe the milkman, maybe some delivery person who was like delivering newspapers or something like that, but no one. And I ran and just had the greatest time. And people sometimes would say to me, "Hey kid, what are you doing? What are you running for?" And I said, "Well, I'm training for track." "Well, good for you. That's great dedication that you're showing. Great dedication." I said, "Well, thank you very much." I wasn't showing great dedication. I enjoyed it. I thoroughly enjoyed running and training for track. I must admit to you, I never ran in a tournament. I never ran in an official race. I ran with my fellows at school, in on the track team where I belong, but whenever there was a track meet, it was always held on Saturday, and that was the day I was allowed to work for my dad and be paid a very handsome salary, a wage. And so I worked for him, and I didn't miss not running in track. And my coach would just say to me, hey, you know, you're good, you know, you could really win some medals for us. And I said, well, I'm winning dollars from my dad. And he says, well, yeah, it's a hard, you know, decision to make, one or the other. And so I said, well, whenever they have track meets on Friday nights or when they have track meets during the week, then I'll go there, I'll be there. But on Saturday, that's my prize-winning day of being with my dad and working and enjoying myself. Now, I made up my own mind. I lived in my ideal mind. I didn't live in a mind that says, oh darn, why can't I run track? Oh darn, why? I ran track. I didn't need the competition to prove to me that I was having a good time. I didn't need the competition of the other racers to have me race well. I kept my own timing. I measured distances as I do so often, and I measured distances so I know when I was doing a mile. And then I'd have my stopwatch, and I would check when I was doing the mile to see how I did it. And I did very well. I did very well. But I didn't tell the coach. I didn't tell the rest of my team. I never told anyone how well I did, because they might want to encourage me to run in the race. And I didn't want anyone encouraging me to do something I didn't want to do, because I had made up my mind and I was already doing it. I was following my ideal mind. And in following my ideal mind, I was not put to by circumstances, by people, by places, by things that were going on around me. I lived in my ideal mind. Now, you say, that's a very simple definition of it. Well, it doesn't take a bigger definition than that. It is a very simple definition to live in your ideal mind. What is it that appeals to you? What is it that makes you happy? What is it your original purity and integrity stand for? Do they stand for following what other people want you to do? My coach had me wrestling, and I was a skinny guy. And most of the guys he wanted me to wrestle with were just a little buffer than I. And so when I'd wrestle with these guys, it was just a hugging match, you know. We were just hugging each other and trying to pin me. And I would usually slide out from being pinned so that they never did pin me. And I never pinned them because I didn't have enough bulk to hold them down long enough to get their shoulders on the mat. But we just had a great hugging match. And I wrestled with maybe 8 or 10 of the guys. And we were, you know, just like a couple of, I don't know what you'd call, salamanders, maybe snuggling and huggling and turning and twisting and rolling and doing things. And they were trying to pin me, and I was trying to pin them, and all in the game of wrestling, which I think wrestling probably is one of the greatest hugging matches that anyone could ever have. And I think people really wrestle because they like to hug. And they don't think that hugging is very mannish, so they have to do it through the violence of wrestling. And they really don't hurt each other. They really don't do any violence. They're just hugging in a very, what would you call it, offensive way to make it look like it's not that they're enjoying themselves. The early Greek and Roman people, the men who were running races and doing things, they all gave each other massages, and they used olive oil for it. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine how slippery that was. Mm-hmm. And they were always naked. They would run naked, they would wrestle naked, they would do everything naked. They were like a bunch of snakes, you know, swirling around each other. And what a joyous time they must have had with each other. But you see, they didn't let anyone's opinion of what they were doing disturb them. In their mind's eye, they were having a good time, and they were doing their job. They were wrestling or running or doing whatever they did, and there was nothing wrong with it. There was nothing wrong with anything they did. And our mind gets built up with all sorts of things that are right and wrong, things that are good and bad, and these things inhibit us from being in our ideal mind. Our ideal mind has no limitations. Our ideal mind has no inhibitions. Our ideal mind has no direction to it. Our ideal mind is just free and flowing. Now, you say, that doesn't sound like that's too cool. That could lead you to having experiences that are not beneficial to you. When you live in your ideal mind, you only do those things which are pleasant for you. You only do those things which are pleasant for others. You only do those things which are rewarding for you, which are uplifting for you, which are satisfying for you. Now, can those things be wrong? No, they are not wrong. They are only wrong when you start thinking you're doing something which is wrong. Now, the ideal mind is incapable of doing anything which is wrong. The ideal mind is incapable of having a desire which is wrong. The ideal mind is incapable of experiencing anything which is inharmonious to its highest and its best. Now, when we start thinking from that point of view, when we start realizing from the point of view of our ideal mind, we are living in paradise. We are living in heaven. When you're living in heaven, what are you living in? You're living in a state of bliss. You're living in a state of the ultimate of meditation, oneness as your God self. You're living in a feeling of magic, of marvelous beingness. You are doing everything right. But if you ever think you're doing something wrong, you're in hell. If you ever think that you are violating anybody or anything, you're not in your ideal mind. You're not in your ideal. Your mind, in your ideal mind, is incapable of thinking of anything which is inharmonious with yourself or anybody else. Your ideal mind is incapable of doing anything, participating in anything which is inharmonious with your highest and your best. But in my ideal mind, I'd like to take another drink. Really? In your ideal mind, you wouldn't even want the first drink. You wouldn't even want the first cigarette or the first marijuana. You wouldn't even want the first thing that would take you away from the state of bliss that your ideal mind keeps you in at all times. You would not want to have a relationship with a person that was not harmonious with you in your ideal mind, because your ideal mind could not equate to an inharmonious being in your life. Your ideal mind could not conceive of you having any experience in your entire life which would be not your highest and best. It could not. You return to your original purity and integrity. You live in your ideal mind. Your ideal mind is paradise. Your ideal mind is the divine in its exquisite best. It sounds like a judgment, but it's not. Because there's no comparison. There's no comparison. You read Richard Bach's Illusion, and Donald Simoda is not feeling too good. He's a reluctant messiah. And the heavens are playing music. The heavens are playing heavenly music. And Donald Simoda's in no mood for music. And he says, turn off that music. And so the music is turned down low. I mean, turn it off. And so it shuts off. Now, why would Donald Simoda ever feel inharmonious with heavenly music, with his divine self? You see, he wanted to leave his divine path. He wanted to not be a Messiah. He wanted to walk away from his spiritual path. And in walking away from his spiritual path, he just became more adamant on his spiritual way. And he challenged people to make him be more spiritual. He challenged the music of the heavens, which was playing, because that's his consciousness, and said, "Be quiet, shut up." But he could not run away from his divinity. He could not run away from his integrity. No matter what he did, he acted like a Messiah. No matter what he thought like a Messiah. And this is what happens to us. We learn of the Messiahship. We learn of being our divine self. We learn of being our ideal mind. And we know what it is. And then we want to go back and be human. We want to go back and live in limitation. We want to go back and have very rich meals and very rich food and very rich activities that we participate in. And when we do that, it doesn't work anymore. It doesn't taste that good anymore. When you are touching home base with your ideal mind, the food is not desirable. Oh, you will talk pleasant about it. You'll smile at it. You will say beautiful things about it. But it isn't there. No matter how glorious the food may be and be prepared, no matter how good it actually is to those who are still very human, to you, blah. And you see, when it's blah to you, set it aside. Don't eat it. Not that it's wrong, but you see, you don't need it anymore. Oh, you may eat things, you may sustain your body in some way, but you'll find you want less and less and less. You don't feel like gorging yourself. You don't feel like having a great abundance of anything. You just feel less and less and less. Your ideal mind is creating your physical body, and that's what we'll talk about next. But your ideal mind is creating your atmosphere of your physical body, in which the ideal body no longer has needs for these things. But your ideal mind is content in itself. Your ideal mind is fulfilled in itself. Your ideal mind is, and nothing needs to be added to it. I'm not kidding you. These are not words that are just pleasant to the ears. These are words of reality. As you can let go and not be possessed, not judge, when you can let go and not be touched by the world about you, what is right for you to do, what is wrong for you to do, what is good, what is bad, when you live in your pure beingness, your ideal mind, you have no desire in the universe to do anything inharmonious with your highest good. Remember that. So direct yourself to being your ideal mind. Direct yourself to living in your ideal mind. But remember, you cannot cling to the past, because in your ideal mind, you will no longer want those things that used to satisfy you. You no longer want your cigarette or your pipe. You no longer want to be hugged by others. You will begin to hug. Instead of being a recipient, you'll be a giver. And as you give, you will be given back, but the greatest joy you have will be in giving not in receiving. This is what the ideal mind is all about. The creator, the revealer. That's the ideal mind. The creator, the revealer. It needs nothing for itself, for it is everything. Are you ready to live in your ideal mind? It's there right now. It's there right now, standing before you, saying, take me, I'm yours. But when you take it, you'll no longer want anybody else to say how wonderful you are, because you know how wonderful you are. You won't want anyone else to give you anything, because what they can give you cannot even begin to compare with what you give to yourself. So follow your path, listen within, and be happy. Because you're magnificent right now. And I love you with all my heart, and all my soul, and all my being. Because you're a reflection of me, of my ideal mind, right now and forevermore.